This is the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, Rod Brindamore, joins us now on the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. That's Joe Giglio. And look, maybe I'm reading too much into this, Rod, but I kind of get the sense after being cooped up in a hotel room for a lot of time, both sides were very much ready to play and a little bit feisty in that qualifying series that you just swept the Rangers in.
Yeah, it was very intense hockey. Playoff-like. I mean, there was no, you know, I thought with the crowd not being there that the emotion of the game might not quite take on the same tone as a normal playoff series, but that didn't happen. The players were competitive as ever. And the crowd was certainly missed, but, you know, the guys went out and played hard, both teams, and you know, it was good hockey.
Rod Brindamore, Carolina Hurricanes coach, joining us on the OG. And Rod, I'm dying to know what you said before game one. Shea comes out with a big hit, Slavin with the goal, and then Willie gets into a fight. I mean, what were you telling these guys?
I didn't have to say much. I think this is where, you know, guys have been, you know, off for 4 months. And, you know, when it gets taken away from you, I think they just really appreciate being the opportunity to play. And I think having all that energy cooped up, we practiced for almost 3 weeks, and they had been going at it a lot longer than that, you know, training on their own. And I just felt like it was all that energy cooped up, and they wanted to go out there and get it on, so to speak. And we were obviously, that was the key in game one, I think, just being ready to go, and it got us to the lead for sure.
Rod Brindamore is the coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. They swept the New York Rangers in 3 games in their best of 5 qualifying series up in the Toronto bubble. You had a plan before the series, Rod, how you wanted to handle your goalies. But did anyone in the coach's room blink after the way Peter played in game two? Like, maybe like, you know, hey, we love you, James, but we're going to go with Peter here in game three?
Not really. I mean, we obviously looked at each other. I mean, you know, he's playing as good as we've seen him play. But, you know, you have to stick with the plan in that situation. I think just because of the amount of games that were required here in a quick amount of time. And we hadn't played any of those guys in a back-to-back game all year, let alone in this situation where they've been off for so long. And so it made sense. I think the fact that we were up 2-0 too made it easier to stick to the plan. I think a lot of times these plans go out the window when suddenly you're pressed against it. But we had a little wiggle room if you know, things didn't go right. And to be honest with you, Reimer, we were questioning whether or not to start him at the beginning, you know, like of the series. He was that good in camp. So it was an easy decision to make.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. That's Joe Giglio. I'm actually glad you brought that up because I was curious. There was speculation as to who you were going to go with, and that can set the tone for the series in general. And I understand there are differences between Mrazek and Reimer, and each brings something to the table that obviously you guys like in that room. So what went into the decision to start Peter Mrazek after, as you mentioned, James Reimer had looked good in camp and also looked good in that exhibition game?
Yeah, I was actually a tough decision. I mean, both guys earned, I think, the right to start in their own way. And, you know, I kind of liken it to, you know, if Peter is your guy going in, you know, to the season and to anything, he hadn't had a chance to not earn it, but, you know, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
we got to give him a shot here to, you know, he's our guy. Let's see what he can do. And knowing that, you know, Rhymes is ready to jump right in. And I think, you know, game one, Peter was excellent. And then obviously game two, he was phenomenal. So that made that decision, you know, I feel good about myself on that because, you know, he obviously deserved the start. And then, like I said, that was the plan all along to get both guys in because, man, we're going to need both of these guys the way the playoffs set up. So that was a good opening round for us.
What did you guys spend more time in the film room replaying? The that sequence with Reimer and then Vatanen coming in and saving the day? And I mean, I'm still kind of shocked that it didn't go in. Or Sebastian Aho on Tony DeAngelo there in the third period that truly kind of sealed things. That went viral on social media last night.
Wow, that was a special move, obviously. And at a crucial time in the game, that just puts it away. And but if you go back to save, it's probably what got us to that point. Yeah. I mean, you know, Rhymes, we haven't had a lot of games that this year where, like, we were out of it. In my opinion, we weren't playing our game, and then our goalie just kept us in it. And I've seen it the other way quite a bit, actually against the Rangers in the regular season. That's how it felt, to be honest with you, in some of the games. And but you know, that's why you got to have goalies. I mean, they're so important, because when your team's not playing their best, you still have a shot if your goalie can, you know, make a few saves that he shouldn't. And then eventually our group was going to get to our game. We never go a game where we're just, you know, crappy the whole game. So I knew we were going to get it together, and, you know, we did in the third. So kudos to the guys for digging in there. But obviously Rhymes was the reason we won that game.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us on the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. That's Joe Giglio. Back to Sebastian Aho. I know this is going to sound weird saying it out loud, but up until that goal, it was almost as if he was having a quiet, dominating series. I mean, he had been pretty much doing everything you expect out of a franchise player. But, you know, like, Andrei Svechnikov has the hat trick, so that's going to get the headlines. But just at a fully healthy Sebastian Aho coming into his prime, just what next-level step has he taken already in these three games that we've played so far?
Well, I think he's accepting that, what you just said, that responsibility. Like, he knows now that he's got to match the other guy's best player. You know, I think we always talk about Jordan Staal having to shut down the other guy, and you know, we're not as concerned with him chipping in maybe offensively, because, you know, he's not playing power play anymore and this stuff. But, you know, Aho gets all the ice time and goes head to head against sometimes the other team's best guy, and he's got to outperform him. I mean, that's why they get paid the big bucks and get all the ice time. So he's accepting that. And you can really see that that's important to him, to make sure he's leading our team that way. And obviously, I think in this series anyway, he did that.
I've been told, Rod, your best players have to be your best players. I'm not sure if you heard that one before or not. But Rod Brindamore, right. Carolina Hurricanes coach, joining us on the OG. You're going to get like 5 days of Dougie Hamilton questions, so I'm going to let you skip that one. But I have a pet theory about Brady Shea. He was the only person to go 7-0 in that Canes Rangers series this year. Just the what he added for you guys this series.
Yeah, that's the guy we thought we were getting. You know, I think when he first got to us, there's culture shock when you first get traded, and I think he was. And then we played him on his wrong side to begin with, so we didn't do him any favors when he first got to us, but I think just getting the time and then, you know, getting a little more acclimated with what we were trying to do. And, you know, he's the one who set the tone. I think when he comes out in his first shift, and, you know, we're all friends after the game, and he's got really great friends on that team. He was, you know, and yet he just comes right out and says, no, I'm playing for real for obviously for the Hurricanes. And I thought he was actually arguably our best defenseman in this series. So he was, you know, he was dialed in. And like I said, that's the guy we thought we were getting when we made that trade.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes here on the OG. All right, you've got some time now. You won't play again until Tuesday. I guess this is a balance of you have nothing to do technically in the bubble other than, you know, eat tape, I guess. But is this a good thing, you know, to get after a physical series just to make sure the guys have some time to rest and get ready to go? Or would you rather, now that you got the momentum going, keep going?
Yeah, that's a great question. To be honest, it's way too much time. You know, not even so much physically. I think we need a couple of days there, but it's just mental stuff when it's not, you know, we're on the road, right? Like, and the guys are away from their families and stuff. This is where it's going to get tough. And we have to figure out ways to fill their time. Problem is, you can't go anywhere. So it's not like we can let them go play golf or let them just get together and do something somewhere. You can't. So that therein lies the problem of, you know, too much time on your hands and stuff. So we're trying to think of stuff right now. Obviously, we're going to practice and, you know, stay sharp. But it is a concern to have this much time.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. Appreciate the time. Stay safe, and I guess we'll see you next week.
We can send you some Uno
cards, right,
buddy. Too.
You got it. Take care.
All right, thanks, Coach. Let's go out to the country. Say hello to West Durham, ACC Network.
George and Lewis, the brothers Johnson.
Here we go.
Uh-huh. How you guys doing?
Good, man. West Durham, on the fan, is thanks to our friends at J.E. Womble & Sons. If they don't have it, y'all don't need it. So, Wes.
Yep.
I've lost track of everybody's plan at this point in time. One league starting up on September 3rd. Another league starting up on the 13th. There's another one on the 26th. Everybody's got cushions and everything else. Some are doing conference only. Some are doing plus one. It really is every college football conference for themselves right now. Chances any of them actually make this work?
Well, boys, this is where we go diving back into the old SIAC football standings of 1918, isn't it?
I remember it was like it was yesterday, Wes.
Some teams played five, some played seven.
Yeah.
A few played nine. I mean, let's be honest, guys. That's if I told you today we were going to get eight games, would everybody be happy?
Yeah,
I would say yes.
I'd say yes.
Eight feels
I'd
like a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so let's just go with, hey, you know what? If we get to eight, we're good, right? And we get a championship game of some sort, and we get a fragmented look at postseason football, including the CFP, which apparently Bill Hancock, who always – God, I love him. I mean, he's the nicest man on the planet said today they're going to make their selections on the 20th of December, just in time to, you know, figure out how you're going to travel all those people, right, or not.
Yeah.
So let's be honest. We're dealing in a unique situation, and if we get to eight, heavens 10 or 11, then, you know, we've beaten the curve, and that's the best thing about this whole deal.
And some of the way these things are being discussed bother me, though. If the schools – I get why you want to go conference only, because you can control your own protocols, right? The ACC will have their own protocols different from the Big Ten's. You don't have to worry about, well, what are they doing that we're not doing?
Well, they're not drastically different. Let's start with that, though.
True. But this minimizes the differences in protocols and things like that. But then I see Whit Babcock, the AD at Virginia Tech – talking about, well, you know, we'd like to have 30-some-odd% of the capacity filled up with the stadium. And it's like, I wouldn't even – like, why are you even talking about having fans in the stands at this point in time? I would be –
Why did Gene Smith say anything in May, Joe?
Right. At this point, shouldn't the focus be – and I can't believe I'm saying this – where the NCAA is publicly going with this, making sure that the student-athletes are the ones that are taken care of first. Spare me everything else.
Don't disagree with you, and I think it uniquely ties to a lot of the other things that are going on around the restart of college athletics, in that student-athletes are taking the initiative to, whether you are so far out over your skis, like the Pac-12 asking for 50% of the revenue, or whether you're being very serious about, you know, potential of post-career insurance, which, by the way, is not a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the number of kids I was around. I mean, I would say easily a dozen kids who had some post-career, no pro career, by the way, post-college career injury, and had to have it tended to for the next year, year and a half after their playing career was over. I mean, some kids got hurt their senior year, and the rehab went all the way through, you know, the following year and change, depending on the severity of the injury. So let's be honest, right? I mean, all that stuff, that's not a crazy idea. And I, you know, there are some good things in what the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have said. And I'm not going to be surprised if there's an ACC document or student athlete driven idea here before we get started. But yeah, the continuity has totally come off the rails in terms of everybody doing the same thing. And the NCAA, I hate to, you know, go down this road with you, Joe, but the NCAA is late to this show.
Well,
they're late to this show. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. They have the Board of Governors today, the all-time, hey, you know, well, we're going to meet and we'll let you know, and then we're going to meet and then we'll let you know. And now they've pushed it to a point where they're going to force you to make the decision. And that's the part that really, I mean, what kind of governing organization is that at the end of the day who pushes the – who kicks the can down the proverbial road so far that they're just going to dump it right back into these conferences' laps and leave schools that want to try and play no choice but to not play. And we've talked about the financial ramifications of those type things at certain institutions for sure.
Wes Durham, the ACC Network, joining us on the OG. I am Joe Giglio. That is Joe Obvious. Wes, did you have Randy Edsall as being on your board as being the voice of reason of this pandemic?
Amazing.
Randy Edsall.
No, and neither did, Norwood Todman, the running back, right? Who was the kid? He said, don't you have an announcement to make after the Fiesta Bowl?
Yes.
Wasn't it Norwood
Shamed
Todman?
Him into,
was that
yes.
the, wasn't that
Jordan,
the guy?
Jordan.
Jordan Todman, I'm sorry. No, I did not have Randy Edsall at the top of the card. However, I did have UConn as the first school to declare athletic bankruptcy. So,
okay.
I guess one and the same counts here, right? Look, they're in financial trouble, and we all know that. So, I can't say that I'm surprised that UConn's not going to attempt to play football. But Randy came with some, you know, fairly thought out and reasonable type, you know, stuff there. So, Let's see where this goes. I'm extremely fascinated as to how all this kind of plays out because I don't think they're going to be the only ones. I think we're going to get two or three schools in the next week or two that will also shut it down at the FBS level.
And that's primarily because of the costs of testing and the safety
yes.
measures, you believe?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think that, you know, we're talking about expansive numbers well into six figures. I mean, you know, you guys are going to talk to Bubba and Kevin and to Boo at some point, I'm guessing, and they'll talk about, I'm sure, the financial commitment that's involved, let alone the resource and the personnel that's involved. But, they're programs with seven-figure budgets on this stuff. And you got to, depending on the number of – I mean, I can imagine Texas is probably into seven figures with all the student-athletes they have. And that's a lot of sports to cover. But you got to treat everybody the same, regardless of kind of where they're ticketed to participate.
Wes Durham, it's Wednesday, joining us on the OG. And Wes,
this ought to be good.
How do you keep college kids from going to parties?
That, to me, is going to be the one. I mean, you guys saw that Louisville stopped four programs today,
yes.
right?
Yes.
In part and parcel because of, you know, going to an off-campus party or going to a campus party. Hell,
Rutgers,
who knows?
Rutgers finds himself.
Louisville was there should be a bingo card of who screwed up today, Louisville or Rutgers? Louisville, Rutgers. Rutgers.
Can I interject, though, real
sure.
quick about –
let's allow me to retort.
When I know what you're saying, Giglio. But I feel like I have to step in here, and I don't want to turn this into – I don't like it when people start to tut-tut college students for not adhering to social protocols or whatever it is.
Right.
When we have grown-ass adults who are still wondering out loud
whether
or not this thing is real, right? Like, I get mad. Like, all of a sudden, it's not my own responsibility. These darn kids. Dude, we have people in charge who are still doing stupid crap. So I'm not going to get on a college
student on them.
About this stuff. But
why would you go to college if you couldn't go to a party?
Well, to get out of your parents' house, maybe? I don't know.
Just to sit in a
just
in
to
a
get
worse
out?
Facility?
Just
like,
to get out?
Your house is better than the college dorm.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But
at least the one I was in.
Let's be honest. If there's going to be a commitment to get this done,
yeah,
that's going to have to be adhered to. I mean, and I can use words like mature and accountable and all these things, but let's be honest. I mean, college kids are going to test positive for this.
Yes.
Now, then we walk that, you know, ethics bridge, if you will. Okay, the college kid tests positive for it. I mean, have we had any, and I don't want to be literal about this, but has there been any student athlete on a college campus hospitalized for it?
I don't think we know the answer to that.
I don't think we know the answer to that.
We saw the LSU player tweet basically that this is real, wear a mask, stay in your house.
We had like the Indiana mother, I think, on mm-hmm. Facebook. Kind of go through what her son had been dealing with. But then you can even go beyond who actually has been hospitalized and who hasn't. We'll get back to this, Wes.
Okay.
All right, so the ACC's
and I'm
got-
not diminishing don't
no,
get me
I know
wrong.
What you're saying.
I'm not diminishing the disease or the virus or whatever here. I'm not that's
no
the last thing I'm doing.
No disrespect to COVID.
No disrespect.
No disrespect to COVID.
That's how we qualify that on the show, Wes.
Okay. I mean but you know what I'm following here. I mean, if we're gonna be reliant upon 85 scholarship football players or 65 or 75, whoever's supposed to put the helmet on Saturdays and run through the tunnel, okay? Mm-hmm. If those 75 will be, quote, accountable and make smart and mature decisions, then we got a chance to have a college football season.
I agree.
Can you do it? I don't know. I don't know that. I don't think any of us do.
I agree with the overall point, but then we also have questions as to whether or not within the conferences are all the schools doing what they're supposed to be doing. Locally, hey, Dave Doran just had availability. He talked about all the precautions that they're taking at NC State. Mac Brown has done several Zoom conferences about the same topic, and they've tried to be as open as they can about COVID testing and everything else.
Right.
Same with David Cutcliffe. So around here, I'd like to think that the coaches around here are doing what they need to do. However, within our own conference, you got Justin Fuente and Virginia Tech,
yeah,
and Caleb Farley, who opted out of this season to go as a late potential first-round pick, saying straight up, we got guys going to Myrtle. We got 100 guys deep out, you know, in the indoor facility, not social distancing. And Justin Fuente doesn't even want to comment on these things and shut this kind of conversation down. It makes me wonder, wait a minute, is Virginia Tech doing what they need to do within the conference? Because all it takes is one football program out of the 15 to screw it up.
Miami Marlins style.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and look, the ratio, and that's why, if people want to get right down to it, that's why some conferences have gone straight conference,
mm-hmm,
and others haven't. And look, the ACC is just trying to adhere to some degree of normalcy, play their 10, get a non-conference game in there. And, you know, some are going to try and play 12 and start Labor Day weekend. I mean, that's a hell of an effort, by the way.
That really is.
I mean, you know,
really
when you think about all the stuff coming into play, that's a hell of an effort. But at the same time, if that's what, you know, the Sun Belt or the American or whoever, you know, wants to do that, then let's move forward and try it. But look, this is not going to be easy. Nobody said it was going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than likely, it's got a higher percentage not to be completed, but a fraction of the games do have a chance to be completed. How does it fall apart from there? How does it put itself back together again? I'm not sure.
Now, we can go into the football trust tree here before we say goodbye.
Oh, boy.
West
here we
Durham.
Go. Third straight week we're going to the trust tree.
Hey,
Jillian.
Late, too. We're late
we're
to the tree.
Late to the trust tree.
So we do have a football season, but things do get disrupted, all right? So let's say you have one conference that plays five games. You have another conference that plays seven games. I mean, any number of things. If we don't have full complete seasons, do we still get a college football playoff? Or do we go all the way back to 1918 and we bring out the UPI, get the Associated Press back? Are there any other polls from back in 1918 that
Helms
we can...
Foundation.
Yes,
I always like to use the Helms Foundation.
36 by the way, was the first year of the AP.
Let's go.
There was a poll at one time called the INS poll. Georgia Tech actually won their national championship.
Hey.
I'm sure.
So
sure.
Can we just start cooking up polls and determine on our own who the national champion will be?
Why not?
We won't have a college football playoff?
I mean, think about when we were in the BCS and we had some guy in his mama's basement, you know, charting out some computer logarithm that was determining who was playing for the national title.
Actually, I thought the Harris Interactive poll was the worst.
No, that's the one.
That.
Now, that's the one that Tony Barnhart and I, when we were doing Daily Radio in Atlanta, actually read the membership and wanted to know if
yes,
they were dead, alive, or member of the Harris poll.
That's an idea.
And I got to tell you, Jillio, staggering the number of people that said they were a Harris poll member and the person was dead. We threw Grantland Rice out and the guy calls, that guy votes in the Harris poll. No, he's dead, sir.
Harris poll voter, Israeli Hooper, adult film star.
Oh, I can see this as being one of the Jillio You're Full Of segments, right?
Oh, easily.
Yeah, I'm sorry I introduced it then.
West Durham, ACC Network. All right, before we say goodbye, you guys got your takeover still going on?
Yep, tomorrow Pittsburgh and Heisman Trophy winner Tony Dorsett.
Ooh, very nice.
Joins the show. We're excited to visit with him, and it'll be a lot about Jackie Sherrill and the national championships. And these have been fun. They've been very enjoyable to do, and we're going to continue them through next week or through this week, and then we'll finish on Monday. And then the schools that are featured on the weekend, by the way, I don't want anybody to think they're getting slighted.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville, Miami. I think it's Virginia Tech will be the following Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to take us through the 14th of August.
Awesome, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys. Thanks.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com. He's a five-star guest. Jonathan, how are you?
What's going on, Joes? How are y'all?
Thank you for opting in to this interview. There's a deadline tomorrow in the NFL for players to opt out. For those who are unfamiliar what's about to take place in the next 24 hours, because there's been a trickle of guys who have announced that they're not going to play this upcoming NFL season in whatever form it takes, what does tomorrow's deadline ultimately mean?
So it means, so what you're going to see is you're going to see a couple more opt-outs. And right now we're at about what I expected in terms of total, which was 1 to 2 per team. We're getting right up to that 60 to 65 mark. So we're going to see some more. The one outlier, of course, is the Patriots with 8, including a couple stars there. But what we're going to see, you got voluntary opt-outs that are $150,000 stipends that you have to pay back, and you don't get an accrued season toward free agency, as well as pension benefits. And then there's the high-risk opt-out. That's $350,000. You don't have to pay it back, and you get the accrued season. So you have to prove that you have hypertension or diabetes or, you know, any of the things that are on the list, mild to severe asthma, et cetera, et cetera. So what it means is these guys can opt out right now, and it's final. They cannot come back. But if you want to opt out after this date and you want to get any sort of money, $150 or $350, depending on what sort of opt out you take, someone in your immediate family, someone that you live with, has to become a COVID-19 risk. Mm-hmm. And so that is one of the ways in which you can opt out later. But and we will likely see that the way this virus is gone. But for, you know, more or less, basically, this is going to be the end of the opt-outs at 4 p.m. tomorrow until one of those individual cases arises.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us, covers the NFL on the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. That's Joe Giglio. The other part of this with the NFL's protocols, they're about to, or they've already introduced, punishments. In other words, you've seen what's happened in Major League Baseball, right? You read stories about the Marlins not adhering to protocols. You saw with MLS, a team not adhering to the protocols. Even in the NWSL, the Orlando Pride did not make it to Utah for their tournament because they went to a bar and stuff like that. So the NFL's had the benefit of time to see how these other professional sports leagues have seen their players take the personal responsibility. And it looks like the NFL is upping the potential fines and punishments if you don't adhere to these protocols. Do you think this will work?
I do think that it will work. I mean, obviously, money talks. Now, if you go to a bar one time and get caught, you know, the fine print here reads there's a written warning. And then the next one, I think, is $14,500. And then it escalates from there until the fourth or fifth time that you do it. That's where you get suspended for at least one game and up to 4 for conduct detrimental to the team. And so I do think that it will be a factor because what these coaches right now are preaching is one fail, all fail. And that's why I continue to harp on the fact that you cannot have loose cannons in your organization. You can't have them from a coaching staff. You can't have them on the roster. As great as Antonio Brown is, who in their right mind would trust him to enter into the social contract of not going out and doing something dumb from now until the beginning of February? No one. No one in their right mind would. And so that's why – and here's the other thing. The NFL and the NFLPA, the players' union, as they agreed to this, as they collectively bargained this, the players' union fought really hard to make sure that that folks in Tier 1 and Tier 2 – so that includes but is not limited to players but also coaches – front office staff, all the assistants and whatnot, that they have to adhere to these policies. Because if you get the assistant offensive line coach who doesn't have to adhere to these rules, and then he comes in and spreads COVID around to all the players who are abiding by the rules, no, he should face the same consequences as everybody else.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us on the OG. And Double J, I saw you tweet a picture of Cam Newton in his dark blue Patriots jersey. As someone who covered Cam for quite a few years in Charlotte, I'm wondering, how did that make you kind of feel?
You know, it's crazy. They do these Photoshops quite well now, so I was very prepared for it. And, you know, the other thing was this is his first photo shoot in many years. Back, you know, all the teams, they do their annual headshots and whatnot. And some guys, usually they're the stars or they're the grumpy veterans, and they're like, nah, just use the one from last year. And
sure.
I think Cam had been saying that since like 2013. And so this was the first time that he got up in front of the camera in this respect in some time. But as it relates to Cam and the New England Patriots, there was an interesting thing out there that Kyle Love, his former teammate in Carolina, who also played for the Patriots, and Bill Belichick, who he said, you know what, it's going to be tough for his personality because the Carolina coaches didn't really, they kind of treated him with kid gloves, and Bill Belichick's not going to do that. And we've heard all the legendary stories of how Bill Belichick in the meeting rooms gave it to Tom Brady just like he would some undrafted rookie wide receiver. And that is true, and I'm glad that Kyle said that because I've sort of been saying that for a very long time, and I think a lot of people didn't understand difference between a personality fit and a culture fit. Cam is a character fit. Cam's a fantastic teammate. He'll do battle with anybody. I mean, roll the ball out there, look at 2015 and what he did with Philly Brown and Ted Ginn Jr. and, you know, and Brenton Burson. So that conversation ends right there. But when and it's not about his celebrations after touchdowns. It's not about that. It's about how he's going to be coached. And you know, he was able to come up with Mike Shula and Kenny Dorsey in Carolina, and he was able to be beside Ron Rivera as Ron Rivera was a first-time head coach. This is going to be the first year Ron Rivera has ever coached a team and not had Cam in the locker room and or on the field. And so all of these things start to add up where, yo, you got Bill Belichick, the GOAT, the greatest to ever do it, in my humble opinion, who's not going to put up with some of the stuff that Ron probably put up with, that Cam was grandfathered into with a Carolina organization that had never really tasted any sort of national relevancy outside of 2003, and certainly never had an international superstar like we saw with Cam in 2015 and 2016. And so once you add up all of those things and he understands, hey, this is going to be a different ballgame, maybe I'm not going to get credentials for my five cameramen and photographers, and they're not going to travel with me on the road or fly the team charter. Maybe I can't, you know, be a little bit late to some of these things or say nah to rehab, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to do my own thing. That's not going to fly. And I think Kyle Love and a lot of people around Cam that I have spoken to have said, all right, we're going to see how this works for Cam because he's going to have to adjust. Bill Belichick is not.
Well, I mean, there's a way for Cam to get his camera guys in there. Just tell them they're part of the advanced team. And, you know, hey, I heard Bill Belichick loves cameras. I don't see what the issue is. I know what
just
you're
not trainers.
I know what you're saying, Jonathan. Jonathan Jones joining us from CBSSports.com. We'll close on this, and you would know the Cam dynamic better than I. However, I have like a human nature type thing, and it's one thing when you know you're the guy, and you just illustrated all the differences between Ron Rivera and Bill Belichick. I would liken it like this: I can go about things a certain way here on 99.9 The Fan. But let's just say one day I got a call up and next thing you know, I'm moving to Bristol and I'm doing ESPN radio full time. And there's a different level of expectation. I'm an adult. I know that some things that I might be able to do around here, I can't do up there because of the different levels of expectations and the platform and everything else. I mean, I would suspect that Cam kind of gets that too. Like, it's Bill freaking Belichick. Like, Cam's got to know that.
Yeah, he's not totally or completely immature or ignorant to those facts. However, again, like, okay, you say all that with Bristol, right? Let's continue that analogy. Mm-hmm. What happens when things aren't going your way? You know, things have been going your way in Raleigh for some time, Joe. You're quite successful. Mm-hmm. I can say that. You go up to Bristol, and for whatever reason, you're just not getting the breaks. Week one, Cam plays the Miami Dolphins, and whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or Tua Tagovailoa, and they lose that week one game to a Dolphins team that just lost two of their best wide receivers to the COVID opt-out. And things start to snowball, right? And we have seen it before with Cam where, you know, in times previous, one loss has turned into two losses.
Yeah.
And it's hard for him to lose these things. And he has such a chip on his shoulder. All you have to do is go to his Instagram at any point of the day, and you'll see that he has a chip on his shoulder. And so if things aren't going to go his way, that is a concern. I don't mean to beat down Cam or anything like that,
because I
believe if they go 11-5, if my goodness, if we play 16 games, that all is going to be well. But once we get into October and maybe things aren't going his way and maybe the foot's not feeling great, maybe the shoulder's not great, you know, maybe more guys have opted out for the New England Patriots. Once those things start going against him, how is his personality going to mesh with Bill Belichick and the Patriot way?
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com. We appreciate it, man. Great work as always. If you want more details on this whole opting out, opting in business, it's all on CBSSports.com. We'll talk to you later.
Appreciate it.
Now it's time for everyone's favorite game. You're full of Jillio. The fastest growing game show in the Triangle. Now, here's your host, Joe Ovius. Let's see if Joe Jillio is really full of
Yes, Jillio has a bunch of trivia questions. Some are true, some are made up. If you think it's true, you say nothing, but if you think you made it up, you shout out your name, and then the big man will say the rest.
You're full of Jillio.
Brendan in Garner. Brendan, what up?
Hey, what's up? Jillio, it's your neighbor.
Hey, B.
Brendan.
What's up, man?
There we
How
go.
You doing?
Good.
I feel like this is cheating at this point. Chris and Clayton, what up?
How's it going, guys?
Good. We are good. All right, Cameron in Lillington, how are you?
Doing good, man.
Fantastic. Again, Jillio's got some trivia questions. He's usually pretty good with the facts, but he's going to make a few up just because. If you think it's true, you say nothing, but if you think he made it up, you shout out your name, and the big voice will do the rest.
You're full of s***, Jillio.
If you're right and he made it up, you win. But if you're wrong and it's true, you are disqualified. Last person standing or the first person who correctly calls Jillio out for his BS wins. Do you guys understand the game?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Let's do it, Jillio.
Yep.
All right. In honor of the Hurricanes and their qualifying round series win, let's do a little hockey today. The Hartford Whalers never won a 7-game NHL postseason series. Good silence. That's true. They beat the Quebec Nordiques in a 5-game series, but never a 7-game series. All right. The Carolina Hurricanes have now won 5 straight postseason series against teams from either New York or New Jersey. Also true.
Oh.
Good silence. Nice. I don't know if you guys are Canes fans or you just don't trust me or you trust me too much. It's 5 in a row now. All right, here we go. The Canes have never lost a playoff series to a team from either New York or New Jersey.
Cameron.
You're full of s***, Jillio.
I most certainly am, Cameron.
Nice, Cameron. That a boy.
The Good Devils job, from New Jersey, East Rutherford, the pride of the swamp. Beat the Canes in 6 games in 2001 en route to winning the Stanley Cup. Pete Hamill was a one-of-a-kind and the last of his kind. A high school dropout, Hamill was a self-made writer turned celebrity newspaper columnist in New York City in the 1970s. He was a storyteller, or more aptly described in the HBO documentary that focused on his career, in the heyday of New York newspapers, as a deadline artist. He died on Wednesday. He was 85. Hamill understood the city in a way millions of people did, but only he could articulate the city's glory and guts. He dated Jackie Kennedy. He drank with Sinatra, yet somehow remained a champion of the city's working class. In his 1998 book, Why Sinatra Matters, Hamill wrote that high art always survives. In their work, he wrote, all great artists help transcend the solitude of individuals. They relieve the ache of loneliness. Pete Hamill was my newspaper hero. Whether it was a column, a book, or an Esquire article, what Pete Hamill wrote transcended the solitude of individuals. What he wrote mattered. May the road rise to meet you, Pete, and the wind always be at your back. And that, Rand, is your shot of Joe to go. Don't throw it away.
I am not throwing away my shot.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Jillio Show Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.